Monster Man, Episode 77, Arakocra to Adherer. Stop missing the Monster Man, it was a bad plan, but I had to get the town on it. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and in this second season of Monster Man, I'm reading my way through the 1981 Fiend Folio for first edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, it's our very first Fiend Folio monsters, and they do not disappoint, so let's get started. Alright, first up we have the Arakocra, which the parentheses helpfully inform us is a bird man. Yeah, no fooling, it's a bird person. The Arakocra is the creation of Lawrence Schick, who also contributed another humanoid animal species to this book, the Tabaxi, who we'll talk about later on, but they're cat people, basically. And this makes a lot of sense. I think, in particular, as fantasy games started to expand what you could and could not play, one of the things that people were always looking for was, you know, animal people. And certainly Tabaxi and Arakocra are both playable races in the current edition of Dungeons & Dragons. And I don't, I mean, obviously, they're all playable races, but they're actually in the books. I think they're in the books anyway. I think they're in supplements. They're not in the core book, but certainly the Arakocra, I want to stay in the Elemental Evil book? Anyway, it's not important. We get pretty much a whole page of description and information about the Arakocra, talking about how they, you know, they sort of do stoop dives down on their targets, talking about how they behave when they encounter other kinds of creature, talking about their reproductive cycle. So it really is a full kind of, like, ecology and society brief. And definitely, you could run, you know, Arakocra encounters, even like a whole little Arakocra scenario using just the information on the Arakocra provided here. So it's a pretty good and thorough description. And it's not super far outside the realm of traditional Dungeons & Dragons, right? It's an animal person. You can already see maybe the move toward that kind of like ecological naturalism. So there is a much more description of this bird person and how it's being a bird person works than there was in the Monster Manual, where we had say like the gnoll is a hyena person. It's just like a hyena person, right? But there's a lot of talk about like how the Arakocra's like arms and wings work, how fast and how maneuverably they can fly, etc., etc. How much they can carry. That's the very last entry. So it's very detailed, and I think we're going to see a general trend toward that level of detail with what you might think of as kind of naturalistic monsters. Maybe not just in this book, but also kind of in TSR throughout the 80s. So the Arakocra's pretty good. I mean, definitely fun to imagine, like, where their villages might be, or, like, where, you know, you're climbing a mountain, so you kind of hire, like, an Arakocra guide, and he's this weird bird guy, and he, like, perches on a rock and looks at you funny, and, you know, he's the guy whose job is to basically go, like, oh, you can't go up there. That place is cursed. Yeah, definitely. The Arakocra are fun, and I think they work in certain contexts. I, in general, am not a fan of the versions of D&D where, like, oh, it's a big city, and there are, like, 80 million kinds of monsters in it, and, like, this shop's owned by a gnome, and that shop's owned by an Arakocra, and it has a half-orc bouncer, and whatever. Like, that, typically, I like my monsters more monstrous, but I think for a certain type of game, the Arakocra work really well. And it's fun to think about what places inhabited by creatures who can naturally fly look like. On a completely different note, let's talk about our next entry, the Achaerae. This was created by Roger Musson, and boy howdy. Okay, this is an example of one of those monsters that's not going to work as well if you can't see the original illustration. And if you don't have a copy of the Fiend Folio, I urge you to get one. There should be a link in the show notes to this episode. They're like $10, which is like £6 on DriveThruRPG, and they're well worth it for the read. And also you can pick up secondhand copies relatively inexpensive, as long as you don't care too much about condition. I think mine was about £10, so that's about like $16 or $17. If you do, I urge you to open it now to page 9 and behold this illustration, which I want to say is by Russ Nicholson. It's not signed, but if it's not by Russ Nicholson, it's by Alan Hunter, and I feel like Hunter very reliably signs his work, so I think it's probably Nicholson. Usually you can tell Russ Nicholson by looking at it, but I don't know. I'm second-guessing myself here. Anyway, what is an Achaerae? Okay, an Achaerae is like a giant, more or less spherical parrot head with a cocky expression on top of four metal bird legs. And its body and legs have separate hit points. That's one of the most common, like, system variations that we see in D&D monster books.
And just, I mean, okay, listen. Though the foul motives which caused these loathsome birds to be first summoned from the infernal regions are now lost from memory, remnants of the original Achaerae flock still stalk the earth, haunting shadowy places and underground passages. In form, they consist of a huge spherical head body with a powerful beak and feathery crest, atop four long legs ending in strong claws. Man-sized opponents cannot usually attack the soft body, but can only reach the hard, metallic legs. Likewise, it will not usually be able to reach a victim with its beak. And its arm body AC is 8, and its leg AC is -1. So definitely that idea that, like, what you want to do is be able to maneuver into a position where you can attack its head, or as I like to think of it, having a bow. But never mind, because what on earth is this? It's a giant, fat parrot head with little wings and a big sharp beak and a smug expression, partly because it's got, like, cool eyebrows. It's just a big handsome boy. Look, this is my big handsome boy. It's a big handsome round bird with four metal legs from hell. What in the blazes is this nonsense? I mean, I love it, but it's like, can you imagine being the wizard that summoned these things? Like, yes, soon my infernal legion shall overrun the earth for my glory and that of my dark masters. Rise, rise from those plains that no man may look upon and stay sane. Rise! For a moment there was hushed silence. And then suddenly a fearful voice broke the stillness. Bagawk! Like, I mean, this is what I meant when I said last episode that the British gamer, and I mean, you know, maybe Roger Musson's not British, I don't know him, but Roger, if you're out there, I mean, I love it. I know it sounds like I'm making fun, and I kind of am, but I also kind of love it. But I'm going to go ahead and guess that he's British, and this ridiculous thing, it's amazing. Like, it's tough, actually. It's a pretty tough opponent, but I think what I love about it most is just how cheerful it looks in the illustration that accompanies this section. So if you look down at the bottom of the page, you'll see this angry bird. Oh my, it is an angry bird. I mean, angry birds don't have feet, but it's basically an angry bird on top of, like, four long legs, right? Like, the big, fat head body. It's an angry bird. Anyway, it's this angry bird, like, rampaging around, clutching a guy in its claws. And there's a guy, like, gesturing bravely at it with his broken sword. So it's just this scene of, like, heroic peril where these characters are running around and, you know, there's a corpse lying on the ground and there's another one rallying the troops with a cry. And they're all about to plunge in and, you know, hazard their lives in desperate battle against, like, an angry bird on, like, four chicken foot-shaped cocktail stirrers. It is nutso, and I love it. Oh, also, its movement rate is not affected if you cut off just one of its legs. And if it loses, you know, its legs, it kind of starts to go away. Of course, it can't fly because it's ridiculous. Oh, and if it gets too badly hurt, it turns into a puff of gas that makes you insane. Because why not? Why not? If there's a backstory behind the Achaerae, I really want to hear it. Does this thing fit clearly into somebody's lovingly crafted campaign background? Or is this just like a what's in the toy drawer monster? I have to know. There is a miniature for it, actually. I the other day I was saying, I bet there's no Achaerae miniature. But no, indeed there was. But it's a real disappointment. It looks far too bird-like. It just looks like a giant parrot with four legs, which is also a demented idea. But the real, like, the cherry on top of the Achaerae is its big, dumb, round bird head body. My big, handsome boy. I'm so fond of him. Finally, we get the Adherer. Now, the Adherer is definitely a monster that originally appeared in the Fiend Factory. In fact, one of the earliest Fiend Factory entries. It appeared in White Dwarf number 7, which should have been sometime in the late 1970s. I don't know off the top of my head, but like 77 or 78, I should think. It was created by Guy Shearer, and it's called the Adherer, but it was originally called the Gluey. Which, is not as threatening a name. I mean, Adherer is not fantastic. So the Adherer kind of looks like a mummy, but it's like a mummy if the mummy's bandages were sticky tape, I guess. It exudes a powerful adhesive, and so if you hit it with a weapon, your weapon sticks to it. And it can turn on or off its stickiness, so it can release a secretion that dissolves the bond. So what it does is it ambushes people by, like, rolling itself in dirt and leaves and twigs and stuff, and they all stick to it to basically create a kind of ghillie suit. And then it just lies on the ground, pretending to be vegetation, and then when you come by, it jumps out, and it grabs someone, glues itself onto them, and then uses them as a human or, you know, gnomish or dwarven or whatever shield. I mean, okay. I feel a little bit like the Adhere is something of a gotcha monster, because the whole idea of it is that it looks like a mummy. So it's maybe meant to tempt you into trying to, like, turn it or casting a resurrection on it, right? Which is the thing that you can do to turn a mummy into a regular human. But the other thing that you can do to a mummy is chuck fire at it, and that's also a very reliable tactic for dealing with a lot of monsters. Like, it could be an orc, and a fireball would ruin its day. So, I don't know that that actually works as well as it may have been intended to. I mean, I don't know what the motivation is behind this monster, but that seems like one of the things. Because its adhesive is flammable, it is as vulnerable to fire as a mummy is. Maybe the idea is that you use miniatures in your game, and you, like, already have some mummy miniatures. I certainly had some spare mummy miniatures, which is how I made my adherer miniature. But it's just a little bit daft, and it's not helped by the illustration, which is again by Alan Hunter, or not again, but which is by Alan Hunter, which just shows it kind of not so much shambling as shuffling, just kind of shuffling along in a leisurely fashion. Seemingly, you know, it doesn't have a very aggressive facial expression, just kind of seems unconcerned, which doesn't seem like a big menace. Now, you could do a lot to make a fight scene with an adherer interesting. It has a fun power. But it does seem like it's sort of only the fun power, and it is one of the creatures that Ed Greenwood complained about. He said that it feels like a video, he didn't say video game monster, but basically that's what he said, is that you understand why it exists in game terms, but you don't understand why it exists in setting terms. And he deplored this this sort of placing of the mechanical challenges of a fight above the idea of the world making sense. And I support that to some extent. I really feel like you ought to have both. Now, I can see the adherer being a thing, right? So imagine here we are in the dungeon, and the whole idea is that it's full of, like, the discarded experiments of some crazy alchemist, right? He's all about synthesizing new potions and other substances, so all the creatures are going to have that kind of chemical theme. So he made a guy that's covered in glue, right? Just like, and he thought it would be useful because, I don't know, it could climb stuff. Oh, and it can climb stuff, right? You can just stick to walls and things like Spider-Man. So it could, instead of rolling itself in dirt and leaves, which is a pretty dumb image, it could cling to the ceiling and drop down on you. That would be fun. Another thing you could do is give it the power to, like, transfer its own adhesive to people. So, like, after it grapples people, they're covered in, you know, sovereign glue. So they run around, and, like, everything they touch, they're sticking to, and then you have to find something to get the glue off. Or it is flammable, so you can burn it off if you're willing to take the damage. Or maybe you have some kind of solvent, or you could cast in a restoration on the guy, or whatever like that, right? I think you can imagine a pretty fun fight scene with this thing in it. You know, if it was just, like, the adherer. By the time I ran into my third or fourth adherer off of a wandering monster table, I would be pretty irritated. The idea that this is a naturally occurring phenomenon that has, what, like, evolved to look like a mummy wrapped in masking tape? I don't really get along with. I don't think that can really work. But I do think that the idea of doing something with, like, a changing status, of sticking people and messing with their movement and sticking to things, like, I think that's fun. It's probably fun once. But there's a lot of monsters, both in the Monster Manual and in this book, that are fun once. And if you get one fun fight scene or one fun encounter out of an otherwise marginal monster like the Adherer, I think you've got your money's worth, right? So I think you can do a lot with the Adherer. I think you have to do a little work to make it fit into your campaign setting, but I think it isn't impossible, particularly if you take out the idea that this is like a species of creature, right? That the masking tape mummy has an ecological niche. Forget that idea, and I think it becomes a lot simpler to use effectively in your game. And I think if you do that, it can be a lot of fun. Okay, those are the first three monsters from the Fiend Folio, and there are some delights in store in our next episode. So please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.